Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast with Martin and Travis.
Yeah.
It's been, I've been gone for like a month. New Slackers recorded one episode. What's up?
We tried, man.
What's up?
Ronnie's been busy. I'm sorry. You got a little bit more flexibility when there's, three legs on the tripod.
You know, I'm gonna call Johnny and have him write a song about you guys.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. It ain't gonna be pretty.
Like, does that mean that you're sending a hitman after us?
Yeah. He might put cocaine all over your body and throw you off a ledge.
Man, we're getting right into it. Sprinkle some crack on him and let's go.
Yeah.
I guess that's the thing.
That's the thing. That's not the segue though. I mean, it could be. Okay. But
can
it's not.
Can I say though, Martin?
Yes.
That I missed you and it's good to have you back.
You're so sweet. Yeah. I missed you all as well.
I speak for us all.
Well, I don't know. Ronnie's not here, so I don't believe it. Because if he loved me, he would have come. Anyways. I recorded last night with Nick. That was very interesting. And then I'll be doing this today. And then I guess next week we're going to be recording too, right? Yeah. That other show.
Yeah, the other show.
Man. No rest for the weary. And because no rest for the weary, we have a plethora of books to discuss. We're going to fully discuss four, but really we're going to talk about five. Let's kick off talking about last week's books, and I guess we'll do it in the order that you have them on your device, and that'll be Dark Red, number five. The final, issue of this series. So Tim Seeley is the writer, Colin Howell is the artist, Mark Englert on colors, and Marshall Dillon on letters. So let's talk about some vampires.
So final? Like, I thought it said like end of volume one or something like that.
Well, that's why it's ?
Oh, there was a question mark?
No, for me. I mean, I guess we can assume because it says end volume one that yes, we're going to get a volume two, but it might not be like immediately, right? I mean, the solicits come out. I'm so behind. I'm like, anyway, it doesn't matter how many comic books I haven't read this month.
Solicits come out on the third week of the month, so
they came out last week.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if they're going to turn around in 3 months on a 5-issue arc. But I mean, regardless of if it comes right back, like that seems like a stronger indication than the end for now or the end question mark. Or something, you know, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's doing pretty well, right?
From my understanding, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Tim's a busy guy, but, there's no reason to doubt that it'll come back.
That is true. That is very true. I know I saw a teaser for Knights Templar 3, and then you guys talked about Shoplifters Will Be Liquidated, which is the best title of all time. Those are coming out in October, so... I don't know. Maybe we'll see him soon. All right. So anyways, final issue for now. So let's talk about this book a little bit. I think we have a lot of politics to discuss tonight, Travis.
Oh yeah.
I mean, a little bit.
Okay.
Being between this book and one of the other ones, which I will say is my favorite. I'm going to say it right now. I was going to tweet about it, but I was like, spoilers.
Seriously?
I loved it.
Oh, Jesus. I know what you're talking about. We'll get there.
I loved it. But we're not there yet. Dark Red. We have a bunch of Nazi vampires. They all go kaput. And we're free to do other things. We'll go there. So how'd you feel about this issue as in terms of resolving the arc of the five that we've gotten?
I really liked it as a final issue of the first arc, you know, like I thought it was a pretty solid and satisfying ending. It's interesting that so much, like basically everything almost that they like set up in the first couple issues, like that kind of is all resolved now. And I mean, you know where they're heading next as far as, Evie is going to Chicago to like do, you know, make some kind of overtures to the Eventide or something. And, you know, Hunter from the Eventide is now in Chip's town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like cleaning up or probably coming after him.
Sure. You you missed a big turn of events.
In that, oh, well, where she's a vampire?
Yes, in that Evie is now a vampire.
Yes, I should have mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, which I don't think was really a surprise, right? I think you probably could have called that pretty early on in the series.
Well, it's, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I feel like it's kind of, I think it's part of the dynamic that they were setting up that they kind of, like, push in this issue where, you know, like, I don't know exactly how to frame it, I guess, but, you know, like, kind of, in this issue, they're talking specifically to the idea that, like, her friendship saved him and kind of, like, made him realize, you know, like, what's important or what's, like, good in people. You know, like, there's something about it was, like, got through, like, in, you know, I feel like he's kind of in a depressed state or something from politics and from, like, seeing the way that, like, the country has gone. And she's able to cut through that. And, you know, now he's obviously more engaged, like, to kind of protect his hometown and stuff, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's been an awakening for him, whereas, like, he was kind of just, like, whatever, drifting, and then, like, he's working at a convenience store, you know?
Well, I think that's true of, like, the three main characters, really, because Evie's kind of that way as well now, right? I mean, what was her purpose before she met Chip? You know, she was just kind of working dead-end jobs. Her life was kind of crappy. She wasn't really respected around town because she's part Native American, this, that, and the other. And, you know, now that she's a vampire, she can do bigger things. So I think it's kind of worked out well for both of them.
Well, yeah, dude. She, like, had cancer, man. And,
yeah.
Like, probably not any kind of coverage to deal with it.
Sure.
So like, she, you know, she's in a whole new, like, situation now.
Mm-hmm. What about, how do you think her disease would impact her being a vampire?
I assume that she's, like, I don't know. Like, that is an interesting quandary, but my thought was that, like, you know, since they set it up as a, like, well, you know, you could turn in me into a vampire and, you know, I would be good, I wouldn't die, etc. Like, I don't know. I'm guessing that just whatever the rules of vampires, they apply. If you want to apply biology or magic or whatever to that, like, I think that this is supposed to do away with that plot point. But from Chip's perspective, I just had the thought that, like now he's got to hunt again or something.
Mm.
You know, like, he was not eating people for as long as they were together.
Right.
But now he's got to get back into that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. I'm just curious, and I do wonder how it's going to affect Chip, right? Because, it, you know, Evie being around made it simple for him because he had a steady blood supply, right? And now he doesn't have that. So does he need to, like, find a new donor? Or is he just, like, going to start, I don't know, going to farms and, like, sucking on cows? You know what I mean? Like, Chip sucking on cows.
Or he could like, open up a blood bank.
You know, like, that should be what every vampire does, right? Isn't that what they did in Blade? Remember that Blade movie where the vampires owned the blood bank? Like, that makes perfect sense. Why doesn't every vampire do that? Just, like, work for the Red Cross or, like, the Blood Connection.
And, like, so what, you just, like, skim a little off the top? Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure they keep inventory, so, like, I don't know, unless you're just like, oh, that was a bad... That tested positive for, like, being real tasty, so, oops, it disappeared.
Absolutely. It's possible, I don't know. So Evie's got a whole new mission, and we meet some new characters there at the end that are kind of keeping an eye on Evie, so that should be interesting when the next volume comes around.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they kind of, like, bring them together. You know, and they, like, kiss, right? Like,
yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, like, bye, you know?
Yeah.
even if, like, I'm sure she's kind of, like, in on the plan or whatever. Like, they're working together. Like, I don't know. She still leaves right away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. But I think they do set up, like, an interesting second arc.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, cool. Let's rate this one up.
Okay, can I just add that in this issue, I feel like they pay off the crayon setup from the first issue.
Yeah.
And that he draws her like a crayon sunrise.
That's right.
And that's nice.
It's very nice. How romantic. All right, give me a rating.
All right, I'll go 4.5 out of 5.
Cool. I'm going to go straight 4 out of 5. It's quite good. I think this whole series was really excellent, so looking forward to the next volume.
Mm-hmm.
Next up on the list is Killer Groove number 3. This is written by Ollie Masters with art by Ian Marin, colors by Jordi Belair, and letters by Hassan Otsami Ilhau. Man, I wish that Ronnie could have said that name.
Yes.
As we learned in last episode, there's a reason he does not read names. He is terrible at them.
He's the butcher, dude.
He is the butcher. Oh, man. All right. So, Killer Groove. I like this issue quite a bit, actually. This was kind of like a side story to the main story that we've gotten. I mean, I guess they all have these little vignettes, right? Where, like, Johnny goes and, like, kills somebody, and there's some repercussions. And then we have some of the other main characters. What's the detective's name? Or the private investigator, I mean. Yep, that's not her name.
That's the one that I don't have in my notes.
Let me tell you. I did not take notes before my vacation, and through my enlightenment journey of the past month, I have still decided to never take notes. So I have no idea. But, you know, like, all these characters are, like, mildly interconnected, and their paths keep crossing for just weird. Like, think about the stuff that happens in this book, right? Like, in every issue. It's just, like, the weirdest stuff, and somehow it keeps bringing all these characters together, right? Like in this one, for example, the PI is hired by this jazz musician to go find his guitar. I guess when he was younger, he let this guy stay at his house, and the guy wanted to learn to play guitar, and he taught him, and the guy's like, hey, can I have your guitar? And the guy's like, yeah, I don't give a crap about the guitar. Here you go. And like the guy stole some of his songs and became famous and got a recording deal out of it. And he's kind of a piece of crap. And when she goes to find the guitar, she kind of sees how, like, all these people are garbage. And I'm curious, like, I mean, I'm assuming Ollie Masters plays guitar, right? Or is in a band. I'm not familiar with him, so I don't know. But it seems like to write this kind of book, like, there's some, like, serious inspiration, you know what I mean? Because he is not very nice to musicians of any kind. And he plays that off through the PI. And I found that pretty interesting. Like when she goes to the house and like she's talking to all these people, like they're all terrible people, right? The guy stole the guitar mm-hmm. and he became famous through somebody else. She's friends with Ollie or with Johnny, and Johnny's a piece of crap because he kills people. And she sees everybody like just getting super high and like talking crap about other people. There's that guy upstairs that's like, I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, he tried to get some from the girl, and he hit her because she said no. I mean, that was my assumption. They didn't really show anything. Like, nobody in this place is very nice, right? But it's like a famous people party, I guess. As famous as they could be in the 70s. So that's all pretty interesting. And I'm curious, like, if there's a personal story there that inspired some of that stuff.
Are you implying that Ollie is actually a hitman?
No, I am not implying that at all. I mean,
it sounds
he might
like
be.
You're saying this is an autobiographical story.
That's not at all what I said.
That you said that.
No,
and,
I did not.
Yeah, I mean that. I guess points like I guess like in a glancing way towards something that I think I've mentioned previously, which is just in the context of this story, like that Johnny's keeping a shoebox full of tapes
yeah.
that are essentially Confessions to Murder?
Yes.
And they have to be setting something up with that?
Well, I mean, surely that's how he's going to get caught. I mean, that's my assumption.
Yeah, and there's going to be details on those tapes that is like, well, you know, we didn't release these details to the public, so
yeah,
you're
right,
screwed.
Right, exactly. There was a rapper last year that he went to jail for that. Like, he had some song about when he, like, ran over this guy and killed him. And, like, they started investigating and, like, the stuff he was talking about on their map. Oh, no. What was it? It was his friend. He killed his friend. And then, like, faked that it was some kind of, like, gang shootout or something. I can't remember what it was. I mean, like, how dumb can you be? You know what I mean?
You got to keep it real, man.
I mean, I get keeping it real. But
you rap about real things. That's what you do.
Yeah, you rap about real things. Just don't rap about
real
stupid things.
You don't want to be a fake rapper. Okay, but going to jail, though, that is good cred for a rap career. So, I mean,
I guess, yeah.
When he gets out in 30 years, you know, he's got a lot of time to work on lyrics.
I suppose.
Yeah. Okay, so getting back to your earlier point, I also, like, made note of that this seems like a pretty dark party that we're seeing.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of feeds into stuff we'd seen earlier in the series that basically, like, points to this kind of post-hippie, like, you know, 70s nihilism thing that, you know, like, you know, Hunter Thompson wrote to with great effect and such, you know, or like, you know, like, it seems to be like a Charlie Manson type, you know, like, oh, we can take hippies and, like, you know, make them, like after that all goes away, they're, like, susceptible to stuff or whatever.
Mm.
I don't know. I think that, like, speaks to the legacy of, like, that idea of, like, what happened after, like, the idealism went away.
True. Yep, that's true. And, you know, even though, like, Johnny is killing people, and that's kind of what's making him famous, really, he's not, like, an evil person, per se, right? I mean, like, I guess you could say he's killing people, he's evil. But he did save his friend.
You mean Detective Lady?
Yes.
Okay, but, I mean, pertinent fact, though, like, that guy, he was that wasn't the guy that he was. No, it was the guy he was.
Oh,
set to
that's
kill,
right. Yeah, he was set,
like,
to kill.
Get a hit out on that guy. So he's like, "Hey, get out of here!" You know, like, which I don't. I thought that was an interesting twist, and I wonder who put the hit out on this musician.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that, like, that speaks to your point earlier about, like, the kind of, you know, strange, like, interconnectedness of events and people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple more things that I'm interested in, is, like, just as a brief point, like, how much time you think has passed so far in the story?
Mm.
Because he went from a nobody playing a bar to, like, a guy who is, like, packing clubs and, you know, like, the murder victim in the beginning of the book is listening to his record.
Right.
And his, like, box full of murder confessions is, like, full to the brim.
Yes.
So I don't know how frequently, like, hitmen get, you know, assignments, but even if it's, like, once a week, I don't know. That seems like a lot. I don't know.
I hadn't really thought about the time frame. I mean, I don't think it's really more than a year, to be honest with you, but I have no idea.
Yeah, I would guess, like, a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. It's got to be, right? Because, like, back then, how quickly could you become famous? There's no social media or anything, right? So it's really, like, word of mouth and radio.
Yeah, and it could just be totally local, too.
That's true.
You know, like, it's all happening in one town, as far as we know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's still a pretty quick, like, rise in terms of, like, the venue you're playing.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so other interesting thing that I thought in this episode, or issue, was like the FBI and the CIA come to visit Uncle Raul, you know, and they make reference to this like little owl from Cuba.
Yeah.
So they're setting up something there, right? I mean, like that was set up in the first issue as well. So I don't know if that is also going to tie direct to, you know, to Johnny. Like Johnny gets an assignment from Little Al to like put the hit on Raul.
Mm. Possible. I mean, that's got to be like the ultimate showdown, right? If Johnny and the PI keep getting like running into each other through certain events, the tie is going to be Raul. Because he left so to get away from all the mafia crap he's involved with.
Yeah, like maybe he whacks Raul and then like she starts investigating and it leads back to him or something.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. All right, is that it? Anything else you got on this one?
Just again the sprinkle the crack on him.
Like, yeah.
Dave Chappelle's genius.
You know, I saw Dave Chappelle last night. Not in real life. But I was watching The Boys.
Ha. Huh. All right, well, spoiler. Thanks. Spoiled.
Sure. Spoilers. Dave Chappelle's in The Boys. Sorry, dude. It's a minor role. It's fine.
I feel like there's like an old Dave Chappelle comedy, you know, stand-up comedy bit about superheroes, but it's just like, I can't get a grasp on it. So
is there?
That's like a Google thing for later.
I'm gonna have to look that up. Because that sounds awesome. Oh, yeah, there is one. Dave Chappelle, superheroes or bad role models? Huh. Interesting. All right, let's rate up Killer Groove number 3. I'm going to continue with my 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I think 4 out of 5 sounds good.
Fantastic. And speaking of sounds good, A Walk Through Hell number 12. And then there was What Happened to Us. This is written by Garth Ennis, with art by Goran Sadzuka, colors by Ives Forsina, letters by Rob Steen. So, Travis, why do you hate this book?
You want to start that way, huh?
I mean, you got answers. You got the thing kind of wrapped up. Not completely, I don't think, but...
I would agree with not completely, and I honestly don't understand what happened basically like from start to finish.
Mm. Okay. So Callahan is not really Callahan.
Mm-hmm.
He was never Callahan. He was always the devil. And everything that happened to him was kind of because he is the devil. And he didn't like not enjoy the crappy things that happened to him because it helped him kind of like test human nature along the way. And I think part of the reason why he's been protected is because there are people in the government that are kind of devil worshippers. And so they're kind of letting him go along and continue what he's doing. Because by doing that, he gives them power. And that's why there's some mention here about, oh God, I wish I remembered. But basically, like, all the crap that if you go on Twitter, if you go in the news section, and you just look at, like, the news, most of the political news, that's why all this stuff is happening. Because God really doesn't give two shits about the world. The devil's been running it the whole time. And now he feels like he needs to kick it up a notch. And, you know, the people that are really shitty people are going to be hanging around. And the good people are not going to be around much longer. And what that ends up happening with humanity means probably all kill each other. And he's totally cool with that because he's the devil. And that's why he's doing all the things that he's doing. The 21st century is the century of the devil. And that's why the people that have kind of encountered him... And he has shown what the century will be like. I have decided that it's so awful that they were going to kill themselves. That's why the SWAT team in issue one killed themselves. That's why that guy shoved his arm down his throat. All that stuff is because he allowed them to see all of the stuff that was going to happen in the 21st century. And he realized that maybe he shouldn't do that anymore. So he kind of tells the FBI agent a little bit about it, but doesn't want to show her because then she'll want to kill herself.
I mean, isn't she already dead, though?
Yes, kind of, but no at the same time. All right, so this is why I really like this book. There's a lot of, like really mystical, esoteric stuff that pops in, but I don't think none of that imagery is direct. Like, even the fact that when you learn that Callahan is the devil, it's like a one-panel thing, right? Like, he basically tells you every single page of this book for whatever it was, like 10 pages. In every page, he's telling you he's the devil. And, you know, when she doesn't believe him, he's like, all right, it's going to get biblical, but I'll show you. And bam, you see this giant demon thing. And then he's just back to being Callahan. So is she dead? Yes, but I think just like in that particular timeline or reality, I think she's now in a different reality. So like when you see when she goes,
you're
to
talking like, about the beginning and the end of the issue,
correct?
Yeah, because he says something to the effect of like, "I'm gonna let you live" or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that yeah. That was your read that that's happening after this experience.
Yeah, the stuff at the diner and stuff is happening after this experience, or well, to be honest, I would say concurrently to the experience. But that's probably way more discussion than is allotted in this podcast or even wanted to be discussed in a comic book show.
What do you mean?
Like I said, I think there's some like really mystical stuff that's being played around with here that a lot of people will probably not catch because most people don't give a shit about any of that stuff. So like what I just said, for example, that this is happening concurrently. And I think I've kind of hinted a little bit about this before, and I wasn't quite sure, but with this issue, I'm pretty sure that that's the case. You know how in every issue you have like all these seeming flashbacks, like jumps mm-hmm. forward in time and jump backwards in time? I don't think that's really the case, actually, because the place where they are, right, in the warehouse, is a place beyond time. So they're experiencing all these things consecutively.
Okay. I mean, that's certainly interesting. I don't feel like that's necessarily clear. You know, like, they don't really reference, like, that they're experiencing these things as visions or something.
Right. They're not visions.
Mm-hmm.
They're not visions. They're literally living each of these moments all at the same time. But the only person that can actually experience those and remember those moments all at the same time is Callahan, because he's the devil. Whereas mm-hmm. the people can't do that. Because your mind doesn't work that way, right? Like, you think of time as a linear thing. So one event happens after another. But Callahan is kind of like a mystical creature, right? So he can see beyond all that stuff. And he's able to experience all these things at the same time. And he's bringing anybody that's in the warehouse, he can show them that. And some of them can handle it and some of them can't. Like Humdinger. What was his name?
Humdinger, yeah.
Humdinger and Driscoll and all those people. They really can't handle seeing all these things. And that's why they kill themselves.
Well, the SWAT team kills themselves because he gives them, you know, the taste of the future. Which, sure. Like, I think, obviously, thematically, seems to be really, like, where a lot of the, like, what ties up a lot of the series, you know? Like, mm-hmm. for instance, like, specifically, remember from the first issue, or like, what does this political stuff have to do with what we're seeing in the warehouse and all that, you know?
Yep.
And it feels like kind of like a non sequitur or something, but I mean, really, it seems to be there essentially to say, like, oh yeah, we're screwed. You mm-hmm. know, like, we're already in hell, like, figuratively, in that, you know, like, basically, you know, are, you know, like, the horrors that are before us are going to, like, shock us all, you know?
Right, and you see that in that one silent page, by the way, when Callahan is the one coming out of the warehouse.
Yeah.
And nobody else.
I mean, that's pretty bleak if that's the message of the series. It's like, we're bones.
That's basically it.
Yeah. I mean, but, like, I'm also confused in that, like, my read of it was, like, there was a statement from Carnahan to the effect of, you know, I'm just the messenger. I'm just the, you know, the herald of this age. Like, I get the sense that we're doing it to himself, and he's just coming to, you know, give us a taste or whatever, say it's here. But I also don't understand what is the connection to Shaw, because there seems to be a statement along the lines of, like, you helped this happen.
Mm.
I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, but I didn't quite understand how she made it happen. Like, the fact that she killed Callahan? Was that, like, the final straw where, like, hey, now I realize nobody's good. Let me just take over this planet. But see, that's not it either, because he mentions that, like, that he's the one that created this, right? God didn't create the universe, he did.
Yeah, I mean, like, but that, I feel, also gets confused when, like, they're talking about Jesus coming, and, like, the last time he came, like, he, like, you know, was working for the devil or something, you know, like...
But he didn't know.
He didn't know, yeah, but, you know, like, does that mean that, like, the devil sent him? I don't know. Like, I don't... That part lost me as well.
Maybe that'll be continued in Baby Teeth.
Ooh. I love this, the Aftershock universe. Don't tease me. But, dude,
yeah.
Donny Cates, like, all of his indie stuff is connected.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tie in the Aftershock universe, it gets a lot bigger.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. No, I thought that whole thing was interesting, though. Because it is, it very much reminds me of, like, Gnostic philosophy, which is, like, there is God, but God didn't create anything. There's, like, this secondary evil God that created the universe and kind of has masked all of humanity into believing that, like, it's the one true God, but it's not. There is, like, a one true God, but he's just, like, this jealous thing that just wants to control everything and everybody and just kind of mess around with people and use them as toys. And I thought that whole thing was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not very familiar with Gnostic philosophy, but I feel like I was confused what they were trying to say about Jesus in here. Like, in as far as he keeps asking, like, if it was better or worse after Jesus or whatever, and was the point of that to be like, it was probably worse, right? Because I sent him, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe it was like hints along those lines. I don't know.
Yes, but I think that ties into the whole present day political stuff, right? Because, like, through Jesus, we get, like, all this crazy violent stuff that happened throughout the past couple thousand years, right? With the church going on crusades and, you know, the Inquisition and all kinds of things like that. You know, like, people paying bishops to be forgiven to go into heaven, right? Like, you wouldn't even need to go to church. You just, like, pay the bishop a couple grand and, like, hey, now you're in heaven. And that seems, like, counter to what some of these philosophies were, where you are just able to do that kind of thing. And relating that back to present-day politics, which I think ultimately is what this book is actually discussing, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, hey, we're America. We're the best country in the world. Like, we're peacekeepers. But, you know, you got, like, the president on Twitter gloating about some guy that made fun of him being happy that his house got robbed or something. That's true, by the way. That happened today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they say one thing, but when you look at what they're actually doing, you get a different meaning out of it, right? But some people do, but people aren't realizing this kind of thing or aren't doing anything about it. And so as a result, they continue to gather power. And in the world of this book, that power ultimately comes from Callahan, because that's exactly what he wants.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I made a statement when we did the first issue along the lines of, like, is the idea of this that, like, our current, you know, political and, like, social media reality is hell? And, like, seems like basically that is the thesis of the whole story. And it's, like, as I said, very bleak if that's what they're saying. if it's a horror story, I get, yeah, like, they're not trying to soothe anybody, but, I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's a lot in here. I think maybe you should reread it.
Yeah, that might help.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think it's very interesting. But again, I don't fault you for not catching some of that stuff. Because, like I said, I think there are people that are reading this book enjoy it, right? Because this is not an easy read book. And it's not a typical book in any way whatsoever. But even through that, like, there are a lot of double meanings into a lot of the stuff that's going on, right? It's like, you know, I always talk about Grant Morrison, for example. But, you know, there's a reason why I like Grant Morrison, and a lot of people can't stand Grant Morrison, in that I understand where he's coming from on certain things, right? And, yeah, you know, some things go over my head, sure. But I understand it because I've been interested in some of the similar things, right? Maybe not like, what's he into? Like chaos magic or whatever? I don't know anything about that. But like some of this stuff is interesting, and to make a story out of that is cool to me. And I'm not familiar with like Garth Ennis's philosophy on things. But you know, there's some similarities to previous works that he's done, right? When you read this book, you can kind of see like Preacher, for example. There's a lot of similarities in the way that Callahan reveals himself in this issue to some of the stuff that we saw in Preacher back then.
I mean, certainly, like, I don't know how to be diplomatic. Like the Garth Ennis that I think of, that's, you know, like, I think there's two Garth Ennises, obviously, like the one being like World War II Garth Ennis, and the other being like, you know, kind of like shock jock Garth Ennis, you know? And like, I feel like reading this, there definitely is like a lot of the, you know, moments that like feel like they're in here to shock people, you know, like,
yeah, sure,
shooting up a mall, or, you know, like, you know, I feel like there's like a rape scene or something like somewhere in here, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. That's, I don't know necessarily like how big of a message he's, you know, trying to send. Clearly, this whole thing had a huge political slant, you know, like there was pages and pages that were written about Trump and et cetera, you know, and like, I don't know, like if this whole thing is kind of a, you know, a partial commentary on like the era of Trump, you know, like, I don't know, maybe I can get behind it in that context.
Yeah. Sure. I'm with that.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So like, this is the end though, right?
Yes. It seems that way.
Did you get the sense that they planned for this issue to be the end? Cause the last issue said to be continued.
No, because if you remember every issue that comes out, I'm like, is the next one the last one? Cause like, I haven't heard anything about it. Is the next one the last one? Because I haven't heard anything about it. And I guess now we know this is the last one. Do I feel like that was planned? I have no idea. I mean, I think 12 issues is a pretty good run for this kind of thing. And for an Aftershock book, I would say that's quite good. Quite a lengthy run. I'm surprised that it went this long. But, I mean, I was surprised when, like, Jimmy's Bastards was coming out. Right? How long did that go? 9 issues? 10 issues?
Yeah, I think so.
And, I mean, I could have seen that as like a 4-issue, 5-issue mini, but I didn't expect it to go beyond that, and, you know, that was not the case. But, I mean, I guess when you have Garth Ennis writing a book for you, you just kind of let him do what he wants to do, you know what I mean?
I mean, I guess maybe it could be a thing where you have the last issue somewhat like planned out, and then you can fill in issues before you're like, okay, we're still doing good. Okay, here's an issue about Shaw. You know, here's an issue about McGregor. You know, here's an issue about Driscoll. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I suppose. I suppose. And I guess we can assume from the final page that, like, this is kind of their hell. Whereas most of the other characters just end up killing themselves over and over again. Their hell is just to relive the entire experience over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, at least, I don't know. Seems like they got a little better.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess. They seem pretty nonchalant about everything that they learned.
They've reached the accepted stage.
That's right. Maybe they've transcended. Maybe they've achieved nirvana. I don't know. Cool. Let's rate it up.
All right. I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5 on this one.
I mean, you know, it's okay to be wrong. I know I haven't told you that in a few weeks, so I'm glad that it came up. Because the book's a 5 out of 5, and I loved it. Matter of fact, I think, not this weekend, maybe next week or something. I gotta catch up on all the comics, but, once I do, I think I'm gonna reread this whole series, back to back, and, see how that goes.
I do allow that rereading it from the beginning might, like, string a couple things together that otherwise I'm not missing, you know, et cetera.
Yes, correct. All right, let's get to this week's books. And Travis, you did not read The Last Space Race number 5. Shame on you. Spoilers, final issue. So because of that, I'm not going to spend really long on it. But I did read it, and I really enjoyed it. Here's the thing, though. I wish you had read it, because I'm very curious how you would feel about this issue. And I'm going to make this as spoiler-free as possible, but I almost feel like it was not a satisfying ending, because I don't think really much of anything that's been planted in the series was concluded in any way. But I did appreciate the message that the final issue leaves us with, and that is something that I don't think we really talked about through this entire series, because I don't think it really came up as a topic based on what we were reading, but that is the idea of people wanting to be remembered for something. And to kind of spoil that for you, Travis, basically the way this book ends is by saying that the universe doesn't give a shit about you, and that's not something you should focus on.
I, dude, just don't worry about me. You know, if you want to spoil the shit out of it, just do it.
Well, here's the thing though, because of the way that this book was told, I think there were some really interesting moments, right? I think the last time that I was on that we recorded about this book, was the issue where that guy is like writing the story and you see the moon kind of like half destroyed. And it made me curious, like, how that fit into the overall story. And like a moment like that, I think fits really well into the way that this book ended. I guarantee you a lot of people that read this entire series and got to this final issue are going to be like, well, what the F? Like, what about this? What about that? What about the other? And guess what? You're not getting any answers to any of those things. And somehow, like, I finished it, and I was like, wait, what? And then I thought about it for a second, and I was like, I'm okay with that. Because I think maybe that's kind of the point of this issue. And I don't know if this was the original planned ending. I really don't. Because this book has had some delays, right? So I am curious, like, was the delay with the writing or with the art or something else? I have no idea. But because of the way this book ends, I do wonder if maybe it was the writing. Maybe Peter did have a different story he wanted to tell, and either the five issues wasn't enough, but that's all he was being given, or, you know, other things he was working on took priority, but he wanted to finish it, and this is the ending he came up with. I don't know, and I don't want to make any assumptions. But I like the ending, because you do get some stuff on the space station, and, you know, in like typical sci-fi fashion, there's like all kinds of things going wrong with the ship, and they have to fix them before they all die. And they fix one thing, and then, you know, three more things pop up. And they fix that, and then three more things pop up. But really, like, based on the premise that we got in issue one, you don't get a resolution to that. And I think based on some of the imagery that we saw throughout the subsequent issues, we don't get a resolution to that either. But ultimately, what this says is, you know, as people, we're often so concerned about, you know, like, be the best. We, and this is like people in general, and then like the uber sense of people. Like, for example, the name of the book is The Last Space Race, right? So like, hey, Russia saw this thing around Saturn. Let's go see what it is. Let's scramble to, you know, be the first ones there. Oh no, China's going to be the first one there. Now let's do this, that, and the other. And if you follow some of the space stuff now, like, this is happening now, right? Like, Jeff Bezos wants to build a colony on the moon in like 6 years. I think, is that right? 2024, I think, or 2026, one of those things. You know, Elon Musk is going to Mars. Congress is talking about like how to figure out mining rights on asteroids and things like that. Like, who gives a shit, right? We have all these problems here on this planet. Why don't we focus on fixing that before heading out into space and creating more problems for ourselves?
It's too late, dude.
Because yes, but that's not what this book is saying.
Earth is done.
This book is saying, you know, and you actually see some flashbacks, right? Like, you see amoebas and jellyfish. You see, like, people crossing the ocean in boats, or, you know, crossing deserts on camels. You know, talking about, like, the exploration spirit of humanity. And how ultimately, like, none of that matters, because how many of those people do you remember, right? And, or like in school, how many of those people are you taught about? And even the ones that you're taught about, like, how true are any of those stories, right? Is it like an over-romanticized version of it, or is it the real story, right? What about everybody else that led to certain discoveries? Ultimately, none of it matters, because you end up dying, and the next person comes along, and the Earth continues. Even if we F it up, the Earth is still here, and it'll find a way to continue. And other things will find a way to continue, and you will be dead and gone. And the universe will still be here until the heat death of the universe. And then it definitely won't matter, because, yeah, the universe will be gone. I thought all of that stuff was kind of interesting. Again, I'm not quite sure how it related totally to the rest of the book, but it was an interesting issue. So I just wanted to mention that briefly. I'm not going to rate it, because you didn't read it, so we're not like discussing it at depth. But if you did read it, I'm curious how you felt about the book. So let us know on Twitter at AftershockPod or Geekvine at The Great Magnet, Rambo316.
Hey,
that's it.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Do they at all get back to the thing where there's like a saboteur in the crew?
It is mentioned.
Okay, cool. Because like, let me just say that, you know, from my perspective, having not read it, admittedly, you know, like generally when I'm reading stuff, especially in a short format, I really want for everything that's in the story to be significant, you know? So to the extent that you set stuff up, I want that to be there for a reason, because otherwise it could be devoted to something else, you know? Like, so I don't know. Like, I have a bias towards kind of, like, clean, structured storytelling. And I can certainly allow for maybe the possibility that, as you said, like, maybe this wasn't the most planned ending.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's pure speculation.
Sure. Yes. But I am curious, from anyone that read it, maybe you should be my new co-host. No, just kidding.
What? Do you have something in your mouth?
Oh, I had a pen in my mouth. My bad. Yeah. I was fiddling with a pen.
Episode title.
Fiddling with a pen? I don't know. That's not very good. All right. Let's talk about the final issue for this week. And that is a brand new book in Knights Temporal, number one, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Fran Gallan. I'm curious how Ronnie would have pronounced that, because I do pay attention to accents. All right, tell me a little bit about Knights Temporal, Travis.
I mean, like, I guess maybe I would start by saying that I think the art is fantastic. You know, it's very flashy and impressive, so I want to give credit there. And I like it a lot, you know? Like, basically, seems like they're setting up the idea that, you know, Gaspard is like this evil wizard on the run from August, and, you know, they go into the woods and, you know, are kind of, like, make it to this vista of weird whatever, crystalline floating things that are paths to the future, and seems like they are, like, essentially popping up into multiple iterations throughout time, all without knowledge of, like, their other iterations.
Oh, like in A Walk Through Hell, you mean?
No.
I know what you're saying. Keep going.
like Cullen, you know, a month ago, reference the improbable or whatever, the impossible girl from Doctor Who.
Yes.
And that seems like a super apt reference, but I think it is interesting that, like, Gaspard is, my assumption is that what is happening to the both of them in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the biggest question for me off the bat is, like, what is up with this Jane character? You know, like, she's sitting there, like, at the gateway, waiting for lost souls or whatever to come by, and she, like, tells them to run through. It seems like she is, you know, there's more to meets the eye there, which, you know, is reinforced at the end when she murders this witness guy that, you know, like, was going to tell August that, you know, like, kind of what's going on, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I mean, like, is she with Gaspard, or is she doing her own thing, and she's using the both of them?
No, I think she's doing her own thing. I mean, it's one issue. So, I think, really, we're getting a lot of setup here, and I don't think there's enough to judge that yet. She doesn't seem to be, like, a bad person, but, I mean, that means nothing based on one issue. And really, we only see her, we don't see her with Gaspar, right? We see her with, oh God, what's his name?
Well, it's August in the August day.
Yeah. Well, it's August in every day.
Mm-hmm.
He's August in the flashback. Maybe she's got to have something to do with this, right? Because he goes into the woods at the beginning of the issue, and that's when he meets her, and then we jump to the present day, and she's still there. So I'm assuming, like, she's got something to do with this time travel thing or this immortality thing. But what that is, I have no idea. And now, obviously, August doesn't remember any of this, right? Because he meets that one guy in the street who remembers him from 50 years ago. And at first, he's like, I don't know who you are. And so at first, I'm like, okay, like, you know, he's protecting his secret or whatever. But as you get further into the issue, it seems pretty obvious, like, he legit does not know who this guy is.
Yeah, like, he's not conscious of, you know, this other life that he lived, you know?
Yeah.
But
he's got to know there's something going on, because he's got this magical sword that pops in and out of his hand.
Yes. Okay, and, like, that, I was wondering what is up with that as well, because, I don't know, like, is that connected to the moment where Jane is like, oh, you should leave your sword, though, you know? Like, if he had taken his sword with it, was that just so that he could, like, you know, have a sword hidden in his hand whenever he wanted to? Or, you know, yeah. Like, can he control when the sword disappears? Or, like, is that going to be a problem at some point?
I mean, he's got to have some kind of control, because he does pop it out when he's getting attacked by the homunculi or whatever. But it does fail in certain points. So I don't know. I mean, she didn't give him the sword, right? That was his sword when he went into the woods. It's just now like a magical hand sword.
Yeah, but she's like, leave that behind because it's not, you know, the sword's not going to help you against these things or whatever. I thought it was significant. You know, as also I thought was significant, like the idea that she hints to Jane, which is like, you know, you came here, you two came here for different reasons. Like you came to the same place, but one is for redemption and the other is for corruption.
Mm.
And I mean, I assume that that is hinting that like August has some, you know, bad stuff in his past that he needs to redeem himself for.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's the other way.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious to see, how that plays out on the second issue.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But interesting premise. I need more right now. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun to read. There's a ton of action. There's cool characters. Cullen is great at this kind of stuff. The art is freaking awesome. But I don't think I have enough yet to figure out what's going on. So
yes. Okay. Question for you.
Yes.
Did you listen to our interview with Cullen?
Yes.
Because it seems like he hinted at the idea that this series could be a bridge in some sense to, like, the larger, like, Bunverse. You know?
Yes.
So all this has to do is pop up in Dark Ark or something, you know? And maybe that doesn't even happen here, but, like, if August pops up in... I mean, Dark Ark's the only one that's ongoing, I guess. But, you know, if we see, like, Unholy Grail or something in this series, then we'll know that this is the Rosetta Stone of Cullen Bunn in the Aftershock universe.
Well, Unholy Grail does have a sword that looks nothing like this one, but it does have a sword. So maybe. Maybe.
We shall see.
I'm not going to speculate on that because I don't know. But, I mean, I could definitely see how this could fit into... For example, those two books.
It'd be so easy to just, like, put in a panel somewhere, you know? Like, just one panel.
Sure. And then you see baby teeth in the background with black eyes.
Well, we know those are shared universe.
That's right. All right. Anything else on this one?
I feel pretty good.
Cool. Let's rate it up. I'm gonna give it you know, I gotta stick with whole numbers. I can't do your decimal thing. I'm just gonna give it a 4.
Wow, you're on the Mike Myers system.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean I'm excited for this, and as I mentioned, like, you know, I think the art really is pretty great. So like, I definitely think this shows a lot of promise. It's got what I want from an issue 1, so.
Cool. Very good. Very good. I think that wraps it up then.
Yes.
For this week, at least. You know what I didn't do? Look up next week's books. What else is new? Got it. Next week! See, I planned this all along. We have Baby Teeth, number 15.
Oh, shit.
And Descendant, number 4. Good week, good week, good week. All right, you can, of course, find us all on Twitter, at Rombar316, at The Great Magnet, at GeekVine, and at AftershockPod. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.